Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
That's where you put the theme song in.
I don't think you should. I think no editing, like one take.
Well, this one we will.
Yay!
Today, on our third Zine Month special episode, we're joined by Graham Gentz to talk Love for the Love Gods and Jordan Doobie to talk Warped FM. Enjoy!
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today we are talking to Graham Gentz, author of Under the Autumn Strangely, about their new game, Love for the Love Gods. Graham, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hey, Brian Elliott. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Good to see you.
See, now we have to keep it in because you referenced it.
The audience will be like, wow, they're so cool.
They're already on such a cool basis right there. Wow, it's so casual and relaxed.
We're actually going to punctuate every answer with ba-da-ba-da for the rest of the interview. This is good.
No,
yeah. Well, Graham, great to have you here. To start us off, can you just give us the elevator pitch for Love for the Love Gods?
Yeah, it's Cabin in the Woods, but for Hallmark movies.
Done.
Done.
Next question.
Yeah.
All right. Great interview.
All right. Good. Thank you. Put up.
Also, I fucking love Cabin in the Woods, and I also quite like a game that does Hallmark movies. So this is extremely up my alley, and I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah. If you broaden it out a little bit, last couple of years there have been more and more romance games, particularly Regency games, and other kind of like, hey, what if we didn't just like take a big elbow drop on rom-coms? What if they're media that we shouldn't like? Who would do that?
What?
And so, you know, this idea came about like my love of 3-hour video essays, and it was talking about the ins and outs of Hallmark movies and loving tropes. And the idea, the meta levels of Cabin in the Woods became this perfect on-ramp for how I was going to talk about these kinds of media.
So, Graham, you know, you this is obviously not your first game, so I think I'm going to throw a question at you that we threw at everyone last year, but we haven't mixed into every interview this year. Do you have a design ethos when you approach games?
My design ethos is usually some very nebulous form of trying to communicate something, whether or not I am upset or interested or struck by something either in tabletop gaming or outside it. My background is in screenwriting, so oftentimes I'm talking about performance or character or motivation, these kinds of things in framing. And so if I am pointing to something individual that I think is kind of unilluminated or unexamined in a role-playing sense, oftentimes that can turn into a game. I said recently that about a third of my games are sort of jokes, but they're not unplayable jokes. For me, the joke doesn't work unless you can actually pick up the game and use the game to make a game, because then it's also like, then, you know, I've written something on the back of a napkin for a gag. And for what I've discovered, that the one third is actually a lot closer to an asymptotic 99, because all of my games are, whether or not they're quote unquote deadly serious or not, like there's a lot of things I'm playing with and things I'm poking fun at, regardless of the elevator pitch being humorous or a joke or whatnot. And that ends up being very political. So it's humor, it's world, and it's how I love and appreciate art and want other people to experience art at their tables uniquely.
What was the either like the central question or the central idea that you were coming at with this game in particular? Like, was there an initial like click off point of the point of the sword?
Yeah, I part of it is the kind of hierarchy and stratification of both like queer theory and misogyny, and how certain kinds of media are looked down upon. Everything from phrases like guilty pleasure to just low art and high art, which I think is insane. And so as a result, the various points of the triangle started to come together in terms of what am I trying to say with this game, and how am I going to try to say it. So one of what was, I mean, I literally have the tenets of the Love Gods at the top, and one of which is like post-structuralism, which in my early playtests, as I'm doing that like 10-minute description of the rules, I would then, you know, clear my throat in a pointlessly theatrical way and then say, tend to the love gods. And then people would laugh when I would say post-structuralism. And I'm like, yes, it worked. Right. Like the bit is there. They're like, okay, we're here. We are doing something serious, but we're going to do it in a ridiculous way. And the second piece was making queer love stories that were tragic, that they were boring, that they were revelatory, that the cultural default of all of these ideas is to be unexamined. And so as a result, the extra work and the extra kind of effort that people have to do on an everyday basis just to be normal. And so that, and then, you know, if I can throw in a bit of mystery and abstraction and surrealism and levels of meta through this lens of Cabin in the Woods, that was the third point my triangle was off and running.
And I think I have to know, what are the tenets of the love gods?
Yeah, it's post-structuralism. It's queer love stories that aren't tragic. And then I have a line about just not being able to dictate what it means to be queer to other people, that you are this enough, or you're not that enough. And that it's not in the tenets, but later on I define, you have your two, the lovers, the main characters that you create, that I call the perfect to the pursuant. The pursuant is the person that comes from the outside into this perfect town. And the perfect is the object of their affection. And I have a sidebar about defining what is and isn't perfect. And that by saying what is perfect, we are able to kind of recreate and redefine and effectively recreate like reality by saying what we think these things are. So it's a sneaky bonus tenet, I think.
There's a great quote in your press kit, if I can quote you back to you, I love on this. The perfect is perfect, as we all are. By adhering to heteronormative ideals of beauty, we actively skew what is or isn't possible. Be conscious of your choices. By reframing what is perfect, we recreate the world anew. It's really beautiful. I also just love that as a little piece of writing.
Thank you. Yeah. All my games are political. All my games are saying something very actively, and they also tend to be quite funny. Even my horror games are very funny. I'm not trying to do some kind of Evil Dead mashup. It's just that I think that these are really effective ways of communicating people and getting their part, their uniqueness as part of this collaborative experience. The alchemy that happens in role-playing games. And so that is a reflection of my frustration with the unassumed kind of limitations, the prisons that are created by all of these heteronormative ideas and the structure in which we all find ourselves. And so for me, as a younger person, reading all of these different very academic ideas meant that as I was enacting them, I was realizing that, you know, anything can be a philosophy text. And so these games are all me communicating what I think about the world and how I think we can make micro communities at our table whenever we play.
And it's interesting that like Hallmark movies is the frame, because like Hallmark movies are such kind of a vehicle for heteronormativity and conservatism,
exactly.
Honestly. So it's like, but I also like that you're like, I'm not simply dunking on Hallmark movies. It's
correct.
Like you're examining them and giving them a new lens and a new twist. That's very cool.
Yeah, if I was going to take Hallmark movies, I was aware of their like aggressive straightness and aggressive whiteness. And so how do I use it in its like best possible way? Deconstructionism for good, right? And so part of that was another piece, the piece that really brought it together. Instead of asking people for permission, okay, can we tell a Hallmark story but have queer characters in it? Again, that's heteronormative thinking. So instead of saying like, no, actually it's the opposite of that. If you want to be straight, like you have to put in the extra work, right? Allowing for the system and the framing to do the work and lift people up, as opposed to kind of having people sneak in the back door, like holding the door open for people as everyone comes in, you know? So,
right.
I'd love to start looking at the game itself and how the mechanics of this game work. So, can you tell me what does a session of this game look like? And also, what are the mechanics that get you to this play space?
I believe very, very strongly in powerful setup tools. A thing that I say flippantly, but quite seriously a lot, is prep is death. It's because I think that most, if not all, role-playing games are made worse the more you prep for them. If you are at a certain level of familiarity with tropes and ideas and character, it also doesn't prepare you for the session, which is to sit down and listen to everybody else. Everybody else is constantly making donations and players are just empty vessels. So a lot of the rules that I've created are, how do we make this all thing, this thing at the table right now that we all have equal ownership over, but you can claim a piece so nobody can contradict or add it to you. So Pulling out, yes, it's Cabin in the Woods. But there's another metaphor that I've used, which is it's essentially like the Truman Show. This is present in Cabin in the Woods, but I've really dialed it up to focus on that you're on a set, and the set is curated, and the set is manipulated by this like a kind of faceless and nameless outside force. That is a part of the frame device in Cabin in the Woods, but really pouring down that there's sort of techies, these people who are there doing stagecraft to manipulate things. So you set up your town, and the town is an elaborate set. It's not real. And there might be people that live that don't know that it's not real. And then there's people who are agents of the love machine, or just the machine, who are sort of double agents. So when you go into your shop that's selling, you know, apple strudel, that might be somebody who's actually trying to get the lovers to either come together or come apart for whatever reason. So I have a list of aspects that you create, and people claim one and say, this is the thing I'm making, and then boom, it's done. And so it's once why everybody has something for it. You do. Two people create the lovers, the pursuant and the perfect. The pursuant, again, coming from outside, the perfect being from there. And pretty much the only aspects that were for the quote-unquote ritual, the great ritual to occur so the world doesn't end, is that the perfect and the pursuant can't be knowledgeable of it. They can't know what's happening. They can't be agents of the machine. And so as a result, this is kind of your starting point. Each character has attributes which are kind of secret and not shared, including theme songs, because I include music as design in kind of all of my games compulsively. And also the perfect doesn't share anything about themselves other than their name and occupation until the moment you first see them. So they say, you know, my name is Darla. I am a lumberjack, and everyone immediately laughs. But I instruct you to come up with a massively complicated or lengthy list of attributes that Darla has, so that the moment that Darla appears, we hit the theme song and then the spotlight goes on that player, and then we all are reveling in the appearance of this character. The other secret of Cabin in the Woods is that it's a metaphor for Hollywood, and it's a metaphor for film. It's not just like this fun thing, which it is, right? It's just like, oh, what if we do Lovecraft in a way we haven't seen before, which by God, more people need to do, because Lovecraft sucks because you know all the characters, you know all the names and all the gods and whatnot. The moment you're like, I don't know what this big hand is, then it's over. So the idea of the gods being both literal gods and also the audience, the people watching the Hallmark movie on TV, means that it affects a lot of the mechanics in the way I choose them. These are things that we are using the god as a metaphor, but also it's fun because having rotating roles, which happens each round, there's a new god, which is just another player who happens to pick up the role. We are finding ways to appreciate the media. So again, back to that first point, how do we celebrate instead of denigrate?
I do really love the idea of having so little about the perfect up front, because then it really does force that, in the way that you were saying, a very active listening. Like, no one knows until we're there. And so now I really have to participate in the game to learn more and to be able to go forward.
And you get the, like, there she goes sort of moment where it gets into slow motion. Like, yeah, that's the best. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of unwritten rules. The idea that, like, you write a bunch of rules in a game and then it's a cookbook. You hand it off to somebody. But there's some things that, it's not that I don't want to say them. I think it's more enjoyable or more fun if people like discover why they're there or how they're interacting, right? This like fruitful void, right? Everything's swirling around and there's some things I describe and some things I don't. And if I say, don't say this until this point, people are like, okay, well, the author wants me to do that. I don't know why. And then people get to create these moments, make their own connections, especially if they're things I couldn't have anticipated. Like that is the magic for me.
I love that. So you've got this meta framing of this story. How do the stories you tell with Love for the Love Gods end? Do we get to the perfect Hallmark movie, or do we take a Cabin in the Woods turn, or is that something you would want people to wait to see and play?
Yeah. So I will be a little vague about it, but the idea is that you have a pacing mechanic. Each scene is halved by a crisis, a dramatic crisis, in which the love god, who is just there, so you get a new love god every scene, and they are simply watching and enjoying. They have no role to play, and so they get to that all they can do is actively listen. And so as a result, they are fully the people being at the table being like, I love being here at the game. I don't have to be the person that says, what do I see? Let me roll some dice every single time. But they have a very important role because halfway through the scene, they say stop. And then everyone else has to respond with, in the name of love. And at that point, they...
I'm sorry. They have to say, stop?
The in love the name God
of love.
Says,
in the name of love. Love. Do, 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 do,
do. And at that point, time essentially freezes, and the love god describes this like great crisis, like a Rube Goldberg machine of a cat knocking a thing over, which like makes the Ketchin explode. And this is something that's outside of the control of the love machine, because they're attempting to curate this perfect relationship. And then the second half, there's certain rules that are then cut off. Secret agents, the machine can't enter in or out. They can only communicate one person at a time through a little found object, which is something I ask the players to pick up. So like a flower pen or like a book, and that's the microphone they're using to like speak into the secret agents and scene. But only one person, a player, can use it. And so in playtests, people are like waving at each other and grabbing it and passing it back and forth, which meant that when I had tables of like 6, 7, 8 people, it didn't slow down because nobody was able to talk over each other. It actually worked better the more players I got, which was very, very exciting. The basic premise, Brian Elliott, is that you can't, the love gods and the ritual are trying to cultivate this hallmark arc. They're trying to prune it. And so as a result, when you have chemistry with somebody, usually you hook up right away. That doesn't happen in Hallmark movies. Or if the classic trope is enemies to lovers, if you hate somebody, you often don't end up with them in a very healthy relationship. This is a fantasy. And so what you're trying to do is create this arc, at least the love machine is. If they're getting too hot, you have to find out ways to separate them. Or if there's no chemistry at all, you have to find ways to make that happen. And so as a result, there's a pacing mechanic which occurs in between scenes, halfway to the end, to decide, yes, have we successfully made the ritual? Is there some kind of meta twist? Are the love gods pleased? Are they displeased? That is the through line throughout.
Yeah, I love a pacing tool that really like I don't want to say forces you, but like it keeps you on the rails. It's just helping, because what you're trying to do is tell this arc of a story, and it's like don't get ahead of yourself. You know, maybe speed up a little bit. Just gets you right where you want to be in the most helpful way possible. I really love that.
And also enjoy the experience of like having to keep it on the rails is like fun. Like I love the speaker, one speaker at a time thing, yeah. In particular that. I think this is a Cabin in the Woods scene where it's them in the room and they're having to like reach over to communicate into the mic to the characters towards the end of the movie. Am I making this up? That's a scene in that movie.
You know,
right?
It's funny because, you know, this is my game and you'd think I know the movie backwards and forwards, but I don't. I haven't seen it in like 7 years. But there is the creepy guy in the gas station who they talk to on a phone. They phone call and they like make fun of him. And there is the meta twist, of course, when the characters like go behind the scenes to go discover the in my game, the love machine, which is entirely possible. But the idea is, how are we creating these things? How am I creating bumpers without rails? How am I encouraging with hard and soft incentives? A soft incentive, of course, I want them to fall in love because that's why we're here. That's cool. Am I being rewarded in some way for that? No. The hard incentive is maybe we don't want the world to end. Maybe we do. And the balancing act is making sure that's not more important than what's happening. How does it motivate players and actions without it becoming the most important thing? Happens a lot in board games, right? You're looking down at your player board and what your cubes rather than, oh, what's happening out here? What are the players doing? Or what is the interaction? And for me, that is the game, the characters, the motivations, the scenes, the getting lost in the slow motion and the theme song being played in the descriptions. If I'm like, oh, we have too many points in chemistry, they're going to have sex soon. there is a kind of amusing aspect to that, but I feel like it would cause more bad experiences than good. So, you know, it's a balancing act.
Yeah, it's a fun twist on like, kind of, I'm always excited by designs where people like take GM lists and make that mean different things. Like it's like you're not just splitting up the GM role. You're giving like different modes of play to people in a really fun, interesting way. It's very cool. And making active listening like a game mechanic. That's like a game mechanic in every game, but it feels like you've like really like you've told this one player. It's like that is your game mechanic right now. And like you've got to be the love god actively listening. It's great. I like it.
Actively listening, but then the other players are also aware that there's a love god, which also kind of affects it, right? Like it's two sides. And so both are very potent and very interesting. As seeing how people act when, oh, you're the love god. And in some ways, like, they don't have as much agency. But in other ways, like, how can you not treat them like some kind of strange entity? And the less I define it, the more tables do themselves, which, again, exactly what I want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You end up the like, casual, like, look off to the side ends up being, like, a whole game mechanic. It's very good. So, kind of getting into the meat of this campaign, when are you funding? Where are you funding? What can people who support this game get?
Yeah, absolutely. So we begin the campaign on February 14th, Love God's Day, on BackerKit.
Nailed it.
Do you want me to take it again, Brian? I've done one crowdfunding game before. Usually I just produce games or I've done work with other people or collaborators. And so I usually don't have a lot of interest in stretch goals. But usually it's a digital copy, the book itself, small editions for community copies being added, and then sessions with me in which, like, we'll play and we'll talk about the game and do everything like that. I've been told by my colleagues that, you know, I want to make stickers and pens. And, you know, the RP art nerds, man, they love it. So, you know, my last game was ostensibly a conversation with Over the Garden Wall. And like, who doesn't like Over the Garden Wall and also is obsessed with art in some way? Like, it's the Venn diagram's a circle. So if there's enough things down the line, you know, maybe there's a Love God sticker in my future, but it certainly doesn't excite me. What excites me is giving this game to people and saying, you know, I am dead. Take this book. Go play a game.
Hell yeah. And what's your goal?
My goal is, I think I can do it in 2K, but I'm hoping that at least 3 or 4. So we'll see.
Is there anyone else working on this with you that you would want to shout out? Like, do you have a team working on this?
Absolutely. So my layout person is Shenza Deladonna, who did the cover for Under the Atom Strangely with me. I am going out of a limb and doing art assets myself this time. I did art design on Under the Atom Strangely before, which was combing through not only oldbookillustrations.com, but also looking over this 16th century 1,000-page treatise on monsters, which had some of the most excellent art I'd seen in a while. And so the idea was picking out things that were like really weird, but not like fully horrific bizarre, because that wasn't the tone I was going for. And so here it's finding a art direction and style and color palette that I really, really like. And then working with just Shenza. Shenza is very, very talented. Her work on the cover for Under the Atom Strangely, I think, is responsible for 98% of my sales. So, you know, that's why wouldn't I want to work with her? She's incredible.
We do love to judge books by their cover. And so we might as well make really cool-ass covers.
We do. We do. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an elevator pitch and a cover. And to any of you budding game designers, you know, pay an artist to make a great cover and then think about what your elevator pitch is. You know, there's a lot of games out here, Brian Elliott, that are very, very popular that you two may not like. And I wonder why that is. I wonder why they're popular. Well, because they got great art. And they got a great elevator pitch.
That is true.
Bold of you to assume Brian and I don't like any games. We love every
game. You love all games.
We love all games. We love every game. Games equally.
Every yeah. game.
Graham, we're doing for this Zine Month, we're doing a new segment on this little interview series that we are confidently calling A for Advice. I say confidently because we were questioning it at first, and depending on what order you listen to these interviews in, you'll get to hear a totally different story.
I want to bring us back down on the confidence, create a weird arc that yeah. goes through these.
A exactly. for advice. So it's kind of like a scarlet letter thing, or
yes.
it's like a grade.
Now it's a scarlet letter now thing. Now it's a scarlet yeah, letter. Yeah, yeah.
For you
great.
Exclusively.
So it's about shame. Got it.
But we've talked to a bunch of designers for Zine Quest last year, for this year, and all the days in between on this show. And we're curious, is there any problem that you're running into for this crowdfunding campaign that we may be able to help with, or that you might want to illuminate for other designers who may be coming up against the same problems.
Oh, are you wearing the A's or am I wearing the A's?
I think we're kind of all wearing the A's.
We all wear A's.
Your first rodeo, so we can have you wear the A as well.
Yeah. The broad question that I get a lot is like, how do I start? How do I begin? And what's funny is that one of the first things out of my mouth is almost always Zine Quest and Zine Month, because there's this arbitrary line between homebrew and being a capital D designer, because the barrier to entry is so minimal. And then all of a sudden that boost in confidence, like you're giving A's for advice, is so vital that all of a sudden, like, then you feel being part of the community, which is my whole second piece, which is community, community, community. You know, all the cliches you want, like rising tides, you know, brings all ships. And occasionally when I'm interviewed, people ask me if I'm like competitive with other designers, real than game space. And I'm like, no, we're not competitors. Like, there's no person who's going to stand and look at my game and look. Yeah. And clearly like a person from like the business world or a different kind of perspective, right? That's going to look at like one of your games and then my game and only pick one and will never buy one of your games. It's just not how it works. And the idea that like we are all individuals and we are small potatoes of small potatoes. And so how easy it is to give other people kudos and pump people up. That's why you have a podcast bringing on talentless hacks like me, because you can give me a little boost, right? So it's community and forcing yourself to get to 100% completion in terms of A's. What I'm focused on a lot this time round is the same thing, which is the bear bug, the offshoot of the good cover and the elevator pitch, which is just promotion. Like, who do you talk to and who do you find? And you know, what is the viral offshoot in which you like leap in and all of a sudden, you know, it's tenfold, right? Your audience is dozens of people, or it's hundreds, and then all of a sudden you're one of the lucky few where it's tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. And that being like the top, which is crazy in like any other industry. So I'm just trying to be honest with what my goals are, what I want, the games that I want, and how to communicate those ideas. That's been, I think, the biggest struggle, is making sure that it's there. Because I've gone through a couple projects, the problems that I'm fully aware of are things like focus and self-confidence, the idea that you will never have passed the 50% point, maybe even before, objectivity about your own work. And so inevitably you're going to run into the, oh, this is terrible, no one's going to like this, this sucks, this is awful, because your nose is too pressed against the glass. So like, you don't know if it's good or not. And so community and support are so vital.
I just want to say a thing that I love about this conversation, and a thing that I really admire about you after having talked to you just this 20 minutes here, is how clearly you know what the thing is that you're making. Like, I know you are so dialed in on what it is and what it means and where it's coming from. I'm just like, man, if I could be like that with everything I make, my life would be so much better. Like, to have that clarity, or at least to be able to present that much clarity, I think is great. And is honestly good advice to anyone who is making anything. Like, be incredibly intentional, be incredibly clear, be incredibly knowledgeable about the thing that you're making. And it just makes everything better. I just wanted to shout that out.
It's a beautiful compliment, Brian. I think it's because, for a couple of different reasons. One is my background as like a facilitator and a writer, and my love of like writer's rooms and the various jobs I've had. And then trying to live my life in a certain way as it affects how I want to make my art, right? And so trying to be brave when I need to, and trying to be safe when I need to, and figuring out that balance means that I'm making conscious choices. I'm being aware of my power, being aware of my privilege, being aware of the doors that I have access to. And again, this metaphor that I can't get out of my head of like, not just, you know, opening the door for people, but holding the door open and saying, come on, come on, come on, and like waving everybody through. These are all very, very important things to me. And I think that's why, you know, ups and downs in any kind of vocation, I return to this space, because I think there is something very powerful about games and role-playing games and shared space and art in this way. sure, you know, we're selling these small things and we live in the shadow of Hasbro, but I'm able to have conversations about this and be excited about things like this. Listen to other people being smart and interesting, which then inspires me. So if I can offer any kind of clarity and honesty about my experience, then, you know, it's going to keep making the space better and healthier.
It's always nice when someone says something that you feel in your heart way better than you could ever express it. You're just like, yeah, that, I'll take what he's having. I'll have one of those.
We'll do a full hour, but you don't, you know, we'll edit nothing.
You know what? That advice gets an A.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's a new bit. Let's see. And it'll depend for the audience. It'll depend where we are in this sequence.
It's always been this way. Then you got to go.
As it has always been.
So, Graham, our final question that we like to ask everybody who comes on Talk of the Table is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation. Normally, this is an anything recommendation, but because it is Zine Month, in the interest of community, could you please shout out another Zine Month project or creator that you would like to share with our audience?
Oh, man. I wish I could. This is something I love doing every Zine Month. I love Zine Month. I love Zine Quest. I think it's incredible. And so, because I've had my nose to the grindstone so much, I have followed many, many things.
You can look. We can cut out you looking if you want to. If you want to give a quick look at your pre-save.
Cut out me looking. Although I will talk the whole time.
Don't make it funny.
Don't make it funny. You hag. No.
Now that you called yourself a hag, we definitely have to keep it. I don't know why, but that really tickled me.
My curse. My curse. I can't not make it funny. What are we doing? What are we doing here? Okay. I mean, Mum Chums is definitely on my list.
What's it called?
Maybe.
So sorry. Mum Chums?
Mum Chums. Yeah, I would be lying if I said I hadn't already made a few Photoshopped images misinterpreting the title. And Tanya is very, very kind to put up with me. It's a slice of life RPG for people who care about kids, but of course, like, you know, I've added sharks and things, chunks of fish in the water. Out of Orbit, troop survival RPG, looks very interesting to me. I mean, I love anything that's GM-less, mostly because of what I like about what it suggests philosophically about the game and the game design. It's already anti-authoritarian. It's already saying, questioning what these mechanics are and what they aren't. You know, there's certain hacks that you have to be really insane or really, really interesting for me to, like, turn my head. Like, I'll absolutely give money for these zines, but, like, you know, will I do much other than the PDF? Maybe, maybe not. But for me, a GM-less game already says, okay, we're addressing something specific at the table. This is something that makes games better, healthier, more interesting, more connective, and more communicative. I mean, Nick Bate, Steal the Throne, was one of my favorites from two Zine Quests ago. Absolutely
Love
incredible.
Steal the Throne. Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. So many smart ideas in that. I had a long thread on Blue Sky recently about my favorite game mechanics. And so, you know, I specifically called out in For the Throne, or Steal the Throne, you build the tension and build the tension and build the tension until somebody can't take it anymore. And then you flip over your card and use it. And Nick messaged me and said, wow, it's not a very flashy mechanic, but, like, thank you for pointing it out. And I'm like, but Nick, that's the whole game. Like, flashy, not flashy. Like, yeah, like, we're role-playing, like, being cool heist people and stealing a titan of a mech that can destroy planets. But, like, that's not the game. Like, we could do that with any rule set. But your rules have made it really interesting to me. So Nick's new game is Against Time and Death, which is a two-player storytelling game of forbidden relationship between elite operatives on two different sides of a multi-sides time war. It's like space Cold War romance. I'm like, you got me. It's complicated enough in the elevator pitch that I want to know what's going on. You know, it's two-player only, which means you're doing something weird. So, yeah.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much, Graham Gens, for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know one more time where they can find you and where they can find Love for the Love Gods this Zine Month?
Check it out on Backer Kit, you know, February 14th.
So I have an itch, grahamgentz.itch.io. And if you want to see me talk about game mechanics or occasionally post meme games for the sake of charity, I'm on Blue Sky, which is This May Be Graham is my handle on Blue Sky.
Discover a world where upstairs downstairs drama meets existential horror. Allow me to introduce you to Our Brilliant Ruin. Our Brilliant Ruin is a tabletop role-playing game set within the fragile remains of a society in the shadow of a dying world. Featuring gilded estates and gothic creatures, you must choose your faction and stand against ruined monsters and scheming rivals. Created by the designers of Vampire the Masquerade and Dune Adventures in the Imperium, and featuring an easy-to-learn D6 dice pool system, Our Brilliant Ruin is the next game you should bring to your table. Go to bit.ly/manysided and use the promo code 15manysided for 15% off the core rulebook. That's 15manysided.
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today we are talking to Jordan Doobie, aka Goosepoop Games, about their upcoming game, Warped FM. Jordan, welcome to the table. So good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We're very excited. This is, I was saying before, this is the start of our Zine Month series. We're kicking it off. We loved doing this last year and we're really excited to talk to more cool designers this year. So thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, this is my first Kickstarter ever doing, so it's a little exciting.
Hey!
Oh, we love to hear that.
Welcome to the club.
Love to hear that. Yeah.
There's going to be a roller coaster of emotions that you're going to go through. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to hear
I feel like I've already gone through that. Really. I'm on the second loop.
Hell yeah.
The first is the hardest, I think, for sure. Yeah, so just to start off, the way we start off all these interviews is, could you just give us the elevator pitch for Warped FM?
Yeah, so Warped FM, it's a rules light, GM-less TTRPG where you are interviewing creatures from other dimensions. You're running your own podcast. Players are playing as the creatures and as the podcasters. And it also works as a one-shot and also has a branching narrative campaign and stuff.
So I think listeners can probably imagine why we were particularly interested in this pitch, being podcasters ourselves.
Talking to game designers is like talking to interdimensional creatures from the multiverse.
Yeah.
And we've had a few explicitly interdimensional creatures on the show before, which is always fun. I guess my first question on this is, why were you drawn to this as your first game? Like, why podcasts as a subject for a tabletop role-playing game?
Yeah, I was just, like, I have a lot of friends who do the podcasts and that kind of thing. And I've been on, like, live shows as well, like, actual plays. And I just thought, Midnight Shower Thought was like posted online. It's like, what if I made a game where you interview creatures? And then it kind of blew up with people. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to make this game. I was planning on a different game to release for Zine Quest, but this one got a lot of people excited. So I was like, all right, I'll just do this. I'll just make it within 1 month before.
I feel like the Midnight Shower Thought game has been a thing that we've had a lot on this show. Like, I mean, Elliot, Rom-Com Drama Bomb was a midnight wake up of, I gotta make this game.
Yeah. That's where I do my best design is in after midnight.
I always say like random thoughts. It just like ideas just feel like they slap me in the face. Like I'm just like minding my own day, and then la da da da, and then I just get like hit with a brick of thought. I'm like, oh, I gotta do this game because that sounds really cool. I don't know how else to explain it besides that way. When people are like, how do you come up with blah? And I'm like, oh, it just enters.
It's the demons.
It's the demons.
The night demons. Yeah. So, Jordan, obviously, you mentioned this is your first Kickstarter, but this is not your first game. You've designed some small board games and RPGs previously. Am I correct in saying?
Yeah.
Well, how would you define your sort of design ethos, like what you find interesting when creating games?
A lot of the reason why I started Goose Poop Games was to create more accessible games for people. It came from, like, I run a lot of board game events and gaming groups in the Portland, Maine area. And I would just see people like walking by on the street and be like, oh, I couldn't play that. I'm like, it's right here. I got it. I could teach you. It's like, no, we just couldn't. Okay, I gotta go. And it just left me wondering, it's like, how can I make this great hobby of games like more approachable for people? Get them introduced to it. So yeah, that was kind of like my goal with starting Goose Poop Games. More accessible stuff, just like games where people can see themselves playing. And usually I just have a really absurdist, wacky style to how I make games. So that just naturally comes out.
As far as accessibility and like getting people more into games, what have you found are people's biggest hangups to getting into a new game, or what has been your most successful avenue to convert people from being, that game's not for me, to, I'll play that game?
Yeah, a lot of it kind of goes to like what people know beforehand. The most basic card game I made was like just a little push your luck. You're just flipping over a card. And then somebody said like, oh, it's like blackjack. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll just say it's like blackjack to people and they'd get it more, you know, just having some kind of reference point that's like more known.
Having a reference point is so helpful because then you have something to grab onto. Like you're not just like reaching in air trying to find anything. You're like, oh, okay, it's this, but it's, you know, there's a little post. Things sticking out of this tree I'm used to climbing.
Also, another thing, I kind of like been talking about it online and stuff, but like avoiding jargon, thinking about it, how like the term gatekeep sounds really intense, but like we kind of gatekeep within the hobby, like newcomers, because we just use like even the letters TTRPG. I took that off of my other game, like my other games. Like Good Soup is a storytelling game because when I put TTRPG on it, people are like, what's that? I don't know what that is. I'm like, well, I guess I got to change it. but like, it's one of those things where if you are in the hobby, you don't really realize how much you could be pushing people away by the like phrases and terms that you're using. So yeah, that's where a lot of the accessibility comes in. It's just using like plain language.
Well, for fear of getting into some of that jargon that we love so much in the hobby, I'd love to kind of pivot over to what the mechanics and system of this game is. How does this game work? How does one play Warped FM? What are the core mechanics going on?
How it works is there'll be a couple of roll tables for you to create your character. So there'll be a podcaster and then a creature, and the podcaster can't, at first they can't see what the creature looks like. It's just kind of like a grayed out kind of like figure form. And so the creature is trying to get the podcaster to guess their composition, like what they're made of. And then the podcaster kind of has a favorite item, and the creature is trying to learn more about the world and about their dimension. So they're trying to guess the favorite item. And so it's kind of almost like taboo, you know, in a sense, where you're trying to like guess each other's things. But the goal, it's just very light mechanics to just try to get a fun conversation going. the podcaster has like a list of questions that I just give to you. Like you'll roll for questions, but that's just to help you if you don't know what to ask next. And then the creature should ask questions. And I'm still kind of fiddling around with the mechanics. That's the fun part about playtesting, is that it's going to keep changing.
Of course.
Yeah. And then like it's actually timed. So like, yeah, so you'll have like 45 minute kind of thing. And then the podcaster would be like every 15 minutes there's, if no one is close to whatever, like the composition or favorite item, then you roll to see how much of a hint you should give to that. And then there is like different quirks like the creature will probably have. So if the podcaster like mentions a topic or just like a trigger word, they'll do something. I don't know. I think just be silly with it. There's also other mechanics that I want to like I'm going to slowly add as you progress through the story. I won't give it away too much, but like the portal that you're bringing people through will start like breaking down. There might be a secret society trying to find your, you're doing this podcast in, you found the portal in your basement laundry room in your apartment. So, so the secret society is trying to like find your basement. And, you know, you might find like the person who invented the portal, a lot of silly stuff. But then that will like add more mechanics. They'll all be like super light. It's mainly like an improv game. So it's mainly just like thinking of it as prompts and stuff.
I do. This feels very similar to a podcast that I love, Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Yeah, I've gotten many people say that. That's what I suggest on the thing. When I came up with this game, I was watching a lot of Very Important People from Dropout. Yeah, where they just like randomly dress somebody in like crazy costumes. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of like the same vibe. But yeah, Hello from Magic Tavern is also similar.
I do really like the idea of like a double taboo game happening, where, because it is kind of a synthesis of what a conversation is, like you're asking questions to learn information, but like having a secret objective in a conversation for both people is very fun and goofy, especially when like one of you is playing, you know, straight man podcaster and the other person is playing wacky alien or creature. I can immediately see how that will very effectively and efficiently like make an interesting weird conversation happen, which is always the tough part of an improv game like that, is like starting to find what is the weird thing and how do I approach it and how do we, you know, keep things interesting. But when you have that secret goal of like, I got to figure out what you're made of, I got to figure out what the hell this thing is that you're talking about.
I think it's really funny to explain like typical human things in the mindset of like, I don't know what that is, or like, I don't know what a record player is. What does that mean? I think that would be really funny. And then just, well, I've been watching the playtesters and it just like, as the podcasters of not knowing what the aliens are, and the aliens just, you know, kind of being them. They don't know that they can't be seen. So they're just like, the podcasters are like, what are you doing? What is going on? There's one player was a sentient mound of cookie dough. And so they were just like gooping it, like kept on sliding down in their chair and like going up and stuff. And the podcaster was like, I don't know what you are. And so it just gets really silly. It's been a lot of fun playtesting this. And then what I've also noticed is it's great for like asking questions, like just conversation starters. Getting to know people, and then also like interview prep, if you want to like get into interviews and that kind of thing, you know, just multiple kinds of resources.
So Jordan, this is your first Kickstarter. We love to ask people, why Zine Month? Why did you decide like you wanted to participate in Zine Month this year?
Yeah, last year I just felt like a lot of FOMO because I saw it and I was like working, I was like working on a game at that time. And I was like, oh, this is not ready for a Kickstarter, and I don't have enough confidence to push it out on a Kickstarter right now. I think that was the good soup game.
Hey, sometimes FOMO is the way to get things done.
Right, yeah. So yeah, this year was definitely like, oh, I want to join in on all the fun. This is really cool. I love zines. I think they're like some niche little punk kind of culture with games and stuff. I always like the weird games that people don't really hear about much.
That is a great thing about Zine Month, is it's just a perfect time for weird fucking games. And it's fun to see, like, it's fun to see what new people are doing that's weird. It's fun to see what, like, established people are doing that's weird. People taking up this challenge of doing something, like, in a month and having this, like, kind of smaller goal to just, like, let me put something out. This is a cool idea I had. Let's see who likes it and who's into it. Inevitably, out of, you know, the hundreds of things that come out of Zine Month, there are, like, five or six that I'm grabbing. And I'm like, ooh, these are really sticking for a long time, which is always really rewarding and fun to see.
So you're going to Kickstarter. Let's get into kind of the specifics of this campaign. What are the dates that you are running? What's the goal? And what platform are you on? Kickstarter, I believe. And what can people get?
All right. Yeah. So be my first Kickstarter. I'm doing very low barrier to entry, kind of. So the goal, $300. I just need 10 people to buy the game, you know. Need 10 people to buy this so I don't freak out. And then, so yeah, I'm going to have like a big launch party and stuff February 6th at 6 p.m. That's when it's going to go live. I'm going to press the button and then scream and run away from my laptop.
That's the perfect way to do it. That's how it's meant to be done.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's out. Goodbye. And then it's going to go until March 10th because I don't want to do it directly on March 6th because that's my birthday. So it's going to be a little bit after.
Yeah, you don't want that to be. You don't want those feelings conflated. No, no, no.
And what can people get when they back?
The first, very first tier is that you can ask me a silly question and then I'll post it on social media and answer it. And then that's just a little fun thing. And then you could get the PDF of the book. And then there's also just the physical zine. And then there's the deluxe edition. So I'm also making a little companion zine that has pre-generated characters. So creatures and podcasters and stuff. So if you want to just like easily jump into the game, it's really quick to do. For the deluxe, I'll also be signing it.
I would highlight to everyone, and I always do this, is like, if you don't have a tier where people can give you a little more money and all you have to do is sign the zine you made, you should do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just going to pull that out for other designers.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, between the book and the deluxe, is there's also going to be like a community copy tier.
Oh, excellent.
It's, you just get the book, but you like toss in like $4. So like I have contacts with libraries and then like cafes and stuff, and I'll give them books for people can play for free.
Oh, physical community copies.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and then the deluxe edition, and then play with the designer. So you get to play with me, and that'll be really silly and fun. And then just like retail copies. So keeping it pretty simple, easy to mail. That's my other worry, is mailing it and making sure everybody gets all the stuff.
I think that's a great, honestly, tip for anyone who's doing their first Kickstarter, of like, don't go crazy. Don't kill yourself with too many question marks. Do the things that you're pretty sure you can do and just focus on making a really cool game. People will get excited about that. You can get more complex later, or you can always just do it after the campaign. If you want to make a new bonus thing, do it afterwards when there's not a time constraint or like a promise that you're making. Just do it when you know you're able to do it.
Yeah, I've been reading like different crowdfunding like books, like Jamie Stagmeyer from Stonemeyer Games. He has a whole crowdfunding book, which is really great because it's specific for like board games. I like thinking about doing, like, if I'm going to have an expansion, it should be like related to the game, so you can use it in the game. I never had the Kickstarter for like good soup, but I had like a 12-sided die that you can get. And then you can also use, I also had a engraved soup spoon because you can use real soup in the game. So it's like everything you could, every like
that's great
bonus stuff you could also still use, which I prefer as someone who buys things. Is like, I don't want it to just be like a little thing that I toss on my shelf. I want to be able to use it.
100%. I have a, Brian, I have a cute idea that I'm thinking about introducing for maybe all these conversations. If you'll let me
go for it.
Try it live.
This is where we try it live.
This is where we try it live. Jordan, this is a thought that I'm building live for these Zine Month conversations, because we did this last year. You know, we watched a lot of folks who came on the show then go on to successfully fund. Brian and I have talked to many, many designers. We have kickstarted ourselves. Is there a question you would want to ask us based on everyone we've talked to that we can help answer, like, on this conversation? Something you're concerned about going into Zine Month that we could help? Ooh. Help guide you through.
This is a cute little section.
It's a cute segment, right? I think it could be good.
What do I want help with? I think is getting the word out there. That's kind of my biggest thing.
Well, I think you've already done everything you need to do. You've come on Talk of the Table, and that's the number one.
Yeah, that's the number one goal. Be the first interview on Talk of the Table. That's it. I succeeded.
You know what?
That's in that guy's book, right?
Yeah, that's in the book.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is something that's come up a lot for us, and I think the thing I'd pull out right now is like, don't be ashamed of posting about the thing. I think that there's a really easy impulse to be hard on yourself and be like, I'm posting too much. I am being annoying. People don't want to hear about it. But like, you know, for every 10 posts you see, like a person sees that once. So like, it's don't be afraid to shout about it. That's my big advice, is like, I think that I ran a crowdfunding in the fall, and that is the most I have ever tweeted and skeeted and Instagrammed about something. And I felt some days like I was the most annoying person in the world, but it works. You got to shout.
There's also times when I've posted about events or shows or games or something tons of times in like a Discord or online, and then like the 50th or 100th time that I'm talking about something, you know, 2 years, 3 years after talking about a podcast, someone will comment like, huh, I've been in this Discord server for years and I've never heard of this. I'm like, how the fuck have you never heard of this?
I've been
shoving this down your throat. Come on.
And it's like, it's always when you're like at like your wit's end, when you're like, I felt like I've told everybody in the world. And then someone comes up and is like, oh, did you hear about this game? I'm like, oh, I gotta explain this again in like a happy way. Oh yeah, so my game is blah, blah, blah. And yeah.
It's just a really good reminder that like, no matter what you're doing, there's still like, you're only still reaching like 10-20% of the people that you think you're reaching. It's just like, kind of keep telling about them, because sure, there's some of those people who've heard about it for the 20th time. A lot of the people are hearing about it for the first or maybe second time. And you need to hear about something a few times before you even really even register that you've heard about it at all.
Right.
Oh, what great advice we gave.
Yeah. What great.
It's so good. Grade A. A for advice.
A for advice is the name of the segment.
A for advice. Yeah, my mentality is always like, there's so many things you could do. Just focus on like what you can.
Mm.
So Jordan, before we get out of here, there's one question we like to ask that we ask to everyone who comes on the show. And that question is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute, fun way of asking for you to recommend something. Normally, we ask you to recommend like something inside of tabletop, something outside of tabletop. Could be a book, movie, game. But for Zine Month specifically, I'd love for you to shout out another creator that you know is doing Zine Month. If you have anyone whose project you're excited about.
Ooh, yeah. Andrew Bowman, who has, he's working on Out of Orbit. He's been a lot of help. And we've been trying to like tag team, help each other with getting things going. And yeah, really great person. And excited expanding on his systems that he's working on and stuff. So Out of Orbit looks really cool.
Very cool. We'll link Out of Orbit in the show notes below.
Thank you, Jordan, so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let our listeners know one more time where they could find you and where they can find Warped FM this scene month?
Yeah, so you can find me on all the social medias at GoosePoop207. You can also find all my games at GoosePoopGames.com. And you can find Warped FM on Kickstarter.
Thank you once again to Graham Gentz and Jordan Duby for joining us at the table. Please go check out Love for the Love Gods and Warped FM, which are still crowdfunding right now. They could use your support. Don't worry, we still got one more Zine Month special episode coming at you next week. So stay tuned to the Talk of the Table feed and keep hearing about some incredible Zine Month projects. And remember, if you want more gaming content from us, you can check out the Many-Sided Newsletter, the Many-Sided Media Discord, or you can go support this show on Patreon at the Many-Sided Media Patreon. Patreon.com/Many-Sided Media. That's your place for ad-free episodes of Talk of the Table and My First Dungeon, bonus content like actual plays and roundtables, and just a best way to help us make this show happen. Rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
I give it an A.
And we'll fade out on laughter. Fade out, fade out.
So classic.